to Scary Basement, where me and my friend Roxy have to review horror movies or die. Worst of all, we're trapped down here in this basement, wherein lurks every scary thing that has ever been, including a zombie with a cudgel, an evil clone of yourself that gets way more engagement on social media, a spider's cobweb woven into a candy cane, even though it's only September, it comes earlier every year, Roxy, and the scarecrow who can walk all around and wants to fuck you up. My name is Mikey McCollar.
And I'm Roxy Polk, and I gotta say, Mikey, that is my worst fear, that I have a doppelganger that is doing better than me somewhere out there. I feel like I do that in my mind already.
I'm so afraid of the idea that, like, you'd be, like, you know, somebody's got the gun pointed at the two Roxys, and they're like, I'm the real Roxy! No, I'm the real Roxy! And then they're like, well, when I look at your TikTok numbers, unfortunately, it doesn't matter who the real Roxy is. We can see who's got the juice.
And then I'm just out. Eliminated.
I'm the Roxy building a brand. No, I'm the Roxy building a brand.
Oh, shit.
Mikey and Roxy, I'm the bad, 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 the big bot. And I got something for you to know. You gotta do a horror movie. You gotta review one or I'll kill you.
Okay, you got any, like, preferences or requests for the movie this week?
Absolutely I do. Okay, so, me and my friends.
You have friends?
I have friends.
Of course you have friends.
They're animatronic creatures, like me. We all went out this weekend and we did an escape room. We did an escape room, Roxy. Have you ever...
Okay.
You ever done one of those?
That's a good bonding experience, yeah. You try to solve puzzles to escape within a certain amount of time.
We had fun! We had so much fun until the very end! At the very end, Roxy, we didn't escape. We didn't solve the puzzles in time. The puzzles were too hard.
Well, I appreciate you trying to actually solve the puzzles instead of just chainsawing everything to solve it. So, hey, that's some personal growth for you, I think.
I wonder if I accidentally chainsawed whatever piece we needed to solve the first, last puzzle, that is to say.
Okay, so you were doing
it. I did do a lot of chainsawing in the beginning. Okay. I chainsawed a lot. All this is to say, I want you to review a horror movie that's kind of like a puzzle. I want a horror movie that we're kind of trying to figure something out the whole way through. But it can't be too hard. It has to be the kind of thing I can maybe guess.
Okay, well, one of my favorite horror movie franchises is Scream, and every movie is like a whodunit.
Oh, that's kind of like a puzzle, isn't it, Rox? That's a great idea.
Yeah.
All right, so review a Scream movie already.
Roxy, I did just see Scream 6, the most recent Scream movie in the franchise. What do you say we review that movie for the Pigbot?
Perfect. Scream 6 is great. I've also just watched it.
Perfect. Let's talk a little bit about some of the characters in this movie before we dive too deep. This movie, I would argue, Scream 6, has two groups. We've got the core four, who are going to be like our series regulars of the Scream franchise going forward. Mm-hmm. And then we've got the suspects / body count. So in the core four, we initially meet Sam, the final girl from Scream 5. She is the daughter of Scream 1 killer, Billy Loomis.
Then we've got Tara, who is Sam's sister, and she is also a survivor of the last movie.
We got Chad, who is a hot dude bro. He survived the last movie. He's very sexy.
And then we got Mindy, who is Chad's sister. She's a horror movie buff and rule setter, and is also a survivor of the last movie.
Now we got the suspects. We got Kirby Reed, played by Hayden Panettiere, returning from Scream 4. She's become an FBI agent in the years since Scream 4, and has been working Scream cases. In this universe, Scream is like a contagion, and she's like, oh, we got more Scream killings. I gotta go stop it. It's just about mitigating Scream-based damage.
It was really exciting to see that she returned, because there have been rumors based on, like, I don't know, what was it, like a article in the last movie, so hey, here she is in a cool leather jacket. And then we've got Ethan, who is Chad's new college roommate.
Interesting. We've got Quinn, who is Sam and Tara's new roommate. Quinn is very sex positive. She is banging a lot of dudes, and we stay on a sex positive queen. Yes.
Then we got Anika. Is it Anika or Annika?
I could not tell you.
Okay, it's been a bit. Anyway.
I feel like this is the kind of character that I had to, like, go to IMDb to remember her name. Because they don't talk about her. She's just kind of there. She's just sort of around.
Mm, yep. She is Mindy's new girlfriend.
We also have Detective Bailey, who is the father of Quinn, the sex-positive roommate. Detective Bailey is a New York Police Department detective. So he's on the Scream case as well.
Everybody's on the Scream case, man. Who is it? Then we got Danny, who is a hot guy from across the hall who is banging Sam. She's kind of keeping it on the lowdown, though. But we don't know that for a while.
It's one of those things where, like, you can tell that Sam and Danny's relationship is only good because it's secret. Like, secret relationships are always 1,000 times more fun than relationships. And they just like the secret. Now that people know, they're not going to last a week. Finally, the last suspect we have, Gail Weathers, played by Courtney Cox. She's a reporter. She is, I think, now officially the only character in every single Scream movie. Is that right?
Yeah, because Sydney didn't come back for this one because she wasn't being paid enough, which apparently was not the directors or people who were, like, making the movie's fault. It was higher-ups who refused to pay her more money, which sucks.
Yeah. Although, I don't
mind. But Gail was there.
I think, like, in Scream 5, they killed off Dewey.
Yeah,
so
which,
we had our original group of three. We had our original core three. Once that was broken, like, I kind of don't mind. Like, if it's not going to be all three of them, I don't mind if it's just one or even zero. That's fine with me.
Yeah, but Gail is in this and she's fun. She's a reporter and kind of back to her old shitty tricks again. It felt like she had a character arc and then they decided, we're not going to do that anymore. She's just who she is again.
We're going to get into this a little bit. Uh-huh. Scream 6 is the sitcomification of Scream.
Yes, that's a great way to describe it.
In a way that I obviously love because sitcoms are my favorite medium.
Uh-huh.
But, like, you're right. Gail Weathers goes through a character arc. And then because it's because her core character is now on a sitcom, she has to just go back to being kind of cruel and mean. And honestly, I'm here for it. Let's get into the plot, Roxy.
Okay. So we start with a college professor who is on an online date. So she doesn't know what this guy looks like. She gets the call at the bar to go outside to meet her date. Very suspicious. Goes into a dark alley and is then promptly murdered by Ghostface. Ghostface then takes off his mask and it's some guy named Jason. We see his face in the first 5 minutes. What the hell's going on?
It was so awesome. I was what is this movie? Are they telling us the killer? And then it's going to be like, usually I hate this when we know the killer and the characters don't. When the audience knows and the characters don't, then I'm just like disconnected from the character. I'm like, you idiot. Don't go hang out with Jason.
Mm-hmm.
But Roxy, Jason goes home and he gets a ghost face call of his own.
Dun, dun.
Ostensibly, this is Jason's partner, Greg, but Jason finds Greg chopped up in the fridge. Jason is killed by another ghost face who leaps out, stabs him, and then looks Jason in the face and says, "Who gives a fuck about movies?" and slices him to death.
Yeah, especially because, like, their entire apartment is like a shrine to movies, and particularly the Scream franchise.
And Roxy, real quick, while we go through this, do you want to kind of, like, toss out some theories? I definitely had some thoughts as we were going where this movie was trying to take us.
Yeah, I think the beginning of this, and we'll get into it a little bit later when we see, like, the ramifications that the last movie had on these characters, I thought it was going to be something about people's obsession with true crime and how they treat it as entertainment and not real people going through pain and suffering because they're so distanced from it and because it has become, like, an entertainment commodity at this point.
That's a way better idea than what I thought and what the movie ultimately did. Because you're right. Like, if so much of Scream is about taking what's going on in horror and commenting on it and defining the rules of it, that's a way better take.
I was really hoping they were going to do that. Yeah, and who knows? Maybe the next movie we'll get that.
But I think we both kind of are picking up on who gives a fuck about movies seemed like this movie's thesis statement. That it was going to be finally a killer who says, like, I understand there are rules to movies. I don't give a fuck. I'm doing my own thing. Which is very much what this movie seemed to be doing. The Ghostface took off his mask right in the beginning. Who gives a fuck about, like, the audience's entertainment and keeping it, like, mysterious? Maybe we're just going to tell a different kind of story. They kind of drop that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I really like about Scream, historically anyway, is that it takes a look at horror in the time period it's made and, like, makes a comment on it with, like, fun twists or jabs towards it, which we talked about this in the Scream 5 one, where, like, cool, it had been, like, so many years since the previous one, so it made sense to do one now. But then it's, like, what, the next year they're doing this movie, where it feels like that's too soon, that there's not really much else to comment on. So, again, that's why I was like, well, the true crime thing is something they haven't done. Also, maybe, but yeah.
There is something to, like, Scream maybe just jumping horror genres. Like, if the next Scream movie is a Saw movie, like, what does the torture porn version of Scream look like? What does the Conjuring universe Scream look like? Like, and then you could keep doing it, but also, like, keep it fresh and keep it commentary focused, which I would argue is in the backbone of Scream. We'll keep going with the plot, but it'll be interesting to see if any of those elements come up.
All right, so now we've got Sam, Tara, Chad, and Mindy, who the four of them now live in New York City. Sam finds out that Tara goes to
New York City.
Yeah.
Remember that commercial? Remember that commercial, Roxy?
Actually, I don't. What is that?
It was salsa. It was a bunch of cowboys sitting around the bonfire, and they were eating paste salsa. Or no, they were eating a different salsa, and they were like, where is this salsa made? And they went, New York City. And they went, New York City! And then they were like, paste is made somewhere in Texas or something. Who cares? Go ahead. Anyway, I forgot to take my ADD medication today. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. Yeah. I didn't remember that commercial, so you transported me to another time, Mikey. And all of our viewers, or listeners here, too. So Sam finds out that Tara is going to a frat party and is not sheltering herself after the killings like Sam is doing. That doesn't sound very safe. That doesn't sound very good for her continued existence of being alive. And at that frat party, a drunk Tara ignores her friends and tries to hook up with a random dude who is obviously up to no good. But Sam shows up at the last minute and tasers the dude in the balls for trying to take advantage of her drunk sister.
This is a fun, like, this is a good save the cat moment. Like, okay, cool. You are our hero because you are standing up for your sister. We love this. Sam, outside, gets a drink thrown on her by another college student because a lot of people at this college that they're at in New York City, they think that Sam was actually the killer from Scream 5. They think that she committed all those murders and framed Richie for them, who was the killer in Scream 5, her boyfriend.
Yeah, there's been, like, a huge social media campaign, apparently, with people accusing her and stuff. And, like, this girl who throws the drink on her, her friend is, like, taking a video. Because, of course, she gets upset when she gets a drink thrown at her. So they get into, like, a little bit of a tussle. And so they film that, then post it online. They're like, look how psycho this bitch is. More proof that she killed the guys. And not the other dude. Yeah.
Now, listen, if you don't react in a milquetoast, almost empty-headed way when somebody throws a drink at you, you're probably a murderer.
Yeah, I think it's also,
and that's just a fact,
another thing of how people just viewing this as entertainment, another thing with the true crime stuff, where oftentimes victims will get blamed for things or something, or survivors will, or like the weird obsession with killers too, like certain celebrity killers that people will have, where like they'll wear a t-shirt of Ted Bundy or some shit, or like write a blog about how much they love the Columbine guys or something.
Roxy, you are pitching a so much more interesting movie than Scream 6 ended up being. I really, really like Scream 6. I like your idea so much better. That is way, way better than what they do. Here's where we get our character thesis statement. Tara, the younger sister, tells Sam, her older sister, that she has to stop trying to protect her. It's time for Sam to let Tara go.
Sam and Tara are then attacked by Ghostface when they go to a grocery store after this little tussle with these drink-throwing bitches in the street. And guess what? Ghostface grabs a shotgun, not a knife, and he's blasting people. Sam and Tara escape, but Ghostface drops a mask with the DNA of one of the killers from Scream 4. What the fuck's going on?
Wow. Listen, I'm going to be obsessed with it now. It's such a great idea you had. This true crime, like, this feels like a robbery. Like, this is like a true crime situation, yeah. I would argue one of the best set pieces in Scream.
Yeah, like the tension with them having to like hide from him and be quiet, and just random bystanders getting killed as well. Like there's a much bigger body count with just like random bystanders who aren't even, you know, a part of whatever the killer's motive is. They don't care.
And such a smart heightening of Scream stuff. You know, we've seen him running around with a knife. Like it's such a new visceral terror for him to have a fucking shotgun. Unbelievable. So yes, as we mentioned, Ghostface drops a mask for the police to find. It's got the DNA of one of the killers from Scream 4 on it. And speaking of Scream 4, Kirby Reed rolls into town. She's now an FBI agent. Also, Gail Weathers is here.
Yay, Gail's here.
I don't even remember why. She has beef with Sam and Tara for like
five seconds. She's writing a story again, Mikey. Instead of writing that Dewey book about like how he was a great man or whatever, she's back on her bullshit writing a true crime book about the events of Scream 5 and calling people unstable, unhinged psychopaths or whatever, like she did with Sydney in the previous books. Or the previous book she wrote in the previous movies.
That rules.
But suddenly, Ghostface murders Sam's therapist and steals her file. This is a therapist who she confided in earlier about her past. After 6 months, she, like, went to this therapist, didn't really tell him what her problems were, until the guy was like, I can't help you unless you tell me. And he also said it in a very suspicious way. For a minute, I was like, this guy seems like he might be sus. What's going on here? But when she finally tells him what her backstory is, he's like, I can't help you. Get out. And
that's how good therapists work.
He exits not only Sam's life, but the movie, because he is now dead and has been stabbed in the face. So he's not a suspect anymore at all.
He exits Sam's life and he exits his own life by dying. Next, we get our big Scream rules scene where Mindy lays the groundwork for what this next adventure in the Scream world is going to be. All of a sudden, Scream is a franchise, and as such, legacy and main characters can now die. Also, the kills have to take a jump in terms of brutality, which we've already seen in a shotgun scene, because you've got to keep upping the stakes. I remember at this point, Mindy says something about, like, somebody's got to get beheaded, and I was like, oh, fuck, they're going to behead Mindy. I was really upset about the idea of it.
Whoa. How did you feel about this particular scene, Mikey, where they're just sitting here, like, in this quad talking to each other? Because for me, it felt like amateur theater production. Like, it was the weirdest acted scene in the entire game for me. The entire movie for me.
I remembered liking it just in the sense of, like, what this scene crystallized for me is, again, this sitcomification of it. And yeah, it's quite meta. I saw this... Because Scream 1 had its quad, I'll never forget Billy Loomis and Stu hanging out with their friends, and it'd be like, well, what if I'm the killer? Blah, blah, blah. Like, it almost felt like they were establishing the quad as, like, their Cheers bar. They're always, like, maybe they're going to come back to this quad every time. I didn't necessarily take note of the performances one way or the other here, but I was very excited for this scene because it was like, hey, Mikey McCollar, we're making a horror movie for you, buddy. This is about TV sitcoms.
Yeah, I think that's probably why it felt so disconnected, because it feels like it's reveling in its references at this point and, like, how meta it's being in a way that's just like... Come on, stop jerking each other off. We get it that this is a very meta movie and all this stuff is going on, but, like, sometimes pointing that out too much in, like, a very long extended scene can kind of, for me, it worked against the movie because it took me out of it in that instance, but I can also say it did that because it does feel more like a sitcom. It does feel like it's a completely different genre suddenly when they're doing this.
I think you're picking out something that, like, I do ultimately agree with, where, like, the characters are kind of glib about the idea that they might be murdering their friends. Like,
yeah, and well, that what they if are I'm in a franchise.
I just kind of showed up.
And it's I'm like, a real human in a franchise for a movie right now. Like, what?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you want your characters to behave like characters, like human beings. And in this, they kind of are embracing their roles as tropes and archetypes, which is a little unrealistic. But again, the way my stupid sitcom brain works, I was like, well, that's how what I do.
So. I enjoyed it for the most part. There was just a tinge of like, wait a minute, this feels a little bit weird. But then we go on to the next scene, which is the whole gang getting together at Sam and Quinn's apartment in the hopes of staying safe, which is like, a very sweet scene, all of them, like, getting food together and kind of having a laugh and feeling like they're real friends, you know?
Yeah.
And they have a life together. But guess what? Wouldn't you know it? Ghostface shows up here, too. Whoops.
Here he is.
Jason, Sam's hot neighbor hookup, tries to warn the group that Ghostface is in the apartment. But he's across the way from them, pounding on the window, and they can't hear anything. So he can't get a message to them before, sadly, Ghostface kills Quinn, the roommate. And also slaughters her hookup of the night, a random dude. He then also tosses Anika off a ladder, which they all very, the survivors, very tentatively, scarily crossed, but sadly, Anika was stabbed and could not make it and falls to her death.
They do this, like, bridge ladder scene between two apartment buildings in New York.
It's very
intense. And they all, like, crawl over, and Anika is the last one. And she is on the ladder, and Ghostface is just, like, shaking it.
Yeah. It feels very, like violent.
Like, it's
but also, like an annoyed toddler or something.
Right. It feels petulant.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Get out of here. And she eventually falls, and it is a very horrifying way for them to kill.
Ghostface, he's certainly racking up that body count.
He's killing a lot of people. There's three people in one scene. Gail Weathers, Courtney Cox, our good reporter friend, she then takes the group to an abandoned movie theater that she discovered through journalism.
Yeah, it's very vague. She figured that, like, Kirby, I think, is Kirby there at the time? Or maybe she's there later or something. She's like, even I didn't know this, and she's an FBI agent.
Right. So the two killers from the beginning, Jason and Greg, remember, they were killed themselves, but they had already set up this ghost-faced shrine. It's full of stab memorabilia, and they've actually gone as far as getting the real-life knives and objects from past Scream movies. Roxy, let me ask you, where are you at killer-wise? Who do you think is the killer at this point in the movie? Do you remember?
So after the apartment scene, actually, the way that the cop reacts, because Quinn, her dad is the cop, like the only kind of cop we follow in the movie aside from Quinn, and the way he's just like, okay, I'm going to throw my job out the window because nobody hurts my family. The way he said that. And like he had had some mentions about like both he and Quinn said that they had lost a brother. And I was like, I bet that brother's Richie. I bet this guy is the dad.
Wow. Roxy, you might have this movie's number.
I think so. But of course, like I've seen all these Scream movies. And one of the things I do appreciate in these and like most well-written whodunits is that they put the clues there so you can piece it together. So I am like overly looking for those things, which like I think everybody who watches the movie is to an extent, but maybe I was a little more aggressive about it when I was going through all of the suspects. And the thing is too, I was like, I bet that could be the dude, but then they'll show other things too, which throughout it I'll be like, oh, but maybe that guy is the guy, or maybe that lady is the guy. Especially because, like, with Scream, there's always two killers. So they did show Quinn getting stabbed, but they don't show her body getting carted away. So I was like, if it's the dad and sister, then maybe it's not, though, if she's actually dead. So who knows?
I'll tell you my big theory that I was working with throughout most of the movie that would have made it a more interesting Scream movie to me. And it's at this moment that it popped into my head, Gail Weathers is the killer.
Okay. And I think that's an interesting angle, honestly.
I was so confident it was happening because, first of all, she found this shrine. Like, they kind of almost make a joke about how easy it was for her to just find this shrine.
Exactly. It's very strange.
And this line at the top that Ghostface uses when he kills Jason, the initial killer, who gives a fuck about movies? That's Gail Weathers' vibe. She is so sick of it. She's lost Dewey. We're kind of establishing in this movie that Scream is, again, a contagion, that there's so many Ghostface killers. Like, I could see her just saying, like, I'm going to kill all of you, and then it's done. We're going to end the Ghostface shit. Who gives a shit about horror movies? I'm tired of you. I'm going to kill this group. I'm going to move on with my life. Let's be done with it. I was so excited about it.
I could also see, like, her slipping back into writing the same kind of books that she did before that she said she wouldn't, like, sliding back on her personal growth to become this. That would make a lot more sense if she just kind of, like, broke down and was like, yeah, fuck all this. Or, hey, this is all I got left now, so I'm just gonna fucking do it. Why don't I? The group then decides to try and catch Ghostface by setting up a sting operation. They're going to wait for Ghostface to call Sam and then triangulate the call to get the location of the killer. And guess what? The plan works, but unfortunately, Ghostface isn't nearby. He's not where he said he'd be. He's in Gail Weathers' apartment. Fuck.
Roxy, I thought we were doing it. Oh, Ghostface is in Gail Weathers' apartment because he is Gail Weathers. And this is where my theory breaks down. Because we go to Gail's apartment. She has a sexy new boyfriend. just introduced, killed immediately.
Very sad.
Very much like, yeah, who cares?
I don't even think he gets a line, so he's probably not even a paid or like a featured extra. He's probably not even getting paid for any lines, which is unfortunate.
Oh, it's so brutal for this poor guy.
He's just a hot bod, I guess.
Well, even then I was like, well, maybe then Gale Weathers' partner is killing this guy because she wants to kill this guy.
Mm.
But no, Ghostface chases Gale, stabs her a bunch. And even at this point, when Gale is on the phone with Ghostface, Ghostface raises the idea. He's like, you would have made sense as the killer. Dewey was too sweet. Sydney's a little hackney. You, though, you finally cracking and becoming a killer? That would have been interesting. And I was like, yeah, it would have.
She does a really smart thing with the call, too, to like try and locate where the killer is. She's able to locate them in a closet and shoot them and actually gets a shot in. Because of the phone being used in the house.
Yeah.
So I think she like hangs up and calls back. And so it then rings to show where they are, which is very fun. But she still gets stabbed, sadly.
Boy, does she. She gets stabbed a bunch. But she like makes it clear, like, you didn't get me. You didn't get me, Ghostface. I'm still alive. I'm going to the hospital.
Yeah, the paramedics show up. They're like, oh, there's a faint heartbeat. Because they're like, she was stabbed so much, she's got to be dead. They're killing her off like they killed Dewey. And then, yeah, the paramedics and the main cast show up. And they're like, oh, yeah, we still got a faint pulse. Let's go. So that didn't quite work out. They need to get a new plan, which now is to trap Ghostface in the theater and kill him there with all the memorabilia. On the train to get to the theater, though, Mindy is unfortunately separated from the group and is then stabbed by Ghostface on the train. She also doesn't die, though, which is good, and goes to the hospital.
It's another, like, all-time great Scream set piece, I feel like. Like, on the train.
Oh, yeah, the tension.
The train. Dude, I love this true crime take that you have on it, because this is, again, this is where, like, a lot of crimes take place. You're, like, kind of in this vulnerable situation.
It's very realistic. Like
trapped in a tube with like who knows who.
Yeah, all these people wearing masks, because there's like this visual set piece that they're using with like many different people in Halloween costumes, including Scream outfits.
Right.
So you don't know who is who.
It really captures the vibe of just feeling like there's something off here. I don't know who is going to harm me, but I feel like they're going to harm me. It's very cool. Very scary. This is like the second character in a row now that they're like, we're killing them, but we're not killing them. So don't worry, guys. Like, so it's it's feeling sitcom-y. It feels like we have established who is going to live forever, and it's going to be these guys.
Well, in the last movie, they did the same thing, too, where you get stabbed in, like, the lower left gut, and that's just, like, or in the shoulder, and that's just horror movie language for you're not dead, but you're just going to be injured, but you can still basically function just like an uninjured person would.
Yeah. I think that's cool. At the theater, Sam once again sees a vision of her father, the original Scream killer, Billy Loomis, in the reflection of a case that holds a knife from the real-life stab killings. Billy Loomis tells her to take the knife
and scan
the place.
I am sick of this narrative device. They really got to stop doing this. It's very stupid. Ghost dad telling her to take the knife. And it's also like Billy Loomis was a shitty killer. Why are they trying to make him like a cool friend and ally to our main character this way?
Roxy, Billy Loomis is kind of becoming the Vegeta of Scream in that he was an enemy. And now, through character growth, he is becoming...
Oh, yeah, character growth. Yeah, the delusions of our main character who is seeing visions of him or something. I really hope whatever the next movie is, they abandon this thing. It's getting old fast for me.
I bet they won't.
You're probably right, unfortunately. Yep.
But Billy is, like, giving her good advice. He's like, take the knife, go through the place, like, make sure this theater is safe. So Sam does so right as Detective Bailey gives her a call, the cop who, remember, just lost his daughter. He tells Sam, Kirby is not who she says she is. Kirby, from Scream 4, was fired 2 months ago by the FBI. Wow. Thanks
no,
for happening.
No, Kirby, not her. She's so cool. Of course she's the perfect killer then. You'd never suspect the cool FBI lady, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a worse version of Gale Weathers being the killer. It's like a legacy character is the killer? Wow, interesting. Not the one we like.
She was, like, I guess very obsessed with horror movies and genre tropes and stuff like that. So I guess the idea is she just went off the deep end. She was too unhinged, too obsessed, I guess.
I guess.
It doesn't really hold much water for long, though. It's just there to kind of
make you question a bit more. And we've got Sam, Tara, and Chad, who are looking for Kirby now because she is probably around because she trapped him in, right? That's what everybody thinks. Until a pair of ghost faces catch Chad and stab the holy hell out of him. They stab him so many times. He has a pink cushion.
He's okay, though.
It's true.
I think he'll be okay. I truly can't remember.
Yeah, no, he will be okay.
Thank God. At this point, Detective Bailey shows up. He shoots Kirby, only to reveal that he, Detective Bailey, is the killer. And the other killers? Are Detective Bailey's son, Ethan. Remember Ethan from before?
Yeah, apparently he's this guy's son. Dun dun.
Also, Quinn.
She's not dead.
We thought she was dead after having all that sex and getting stabbed. But no, Quinn never died. She faked her death to get off the suspect list, which is insane and very funny. I really, that is the ultimate, like, we have gone down tropes. Like, it's a construct of the film that there is a suspect list, right? Like, there's not, no real person is doing this. Also, Detective Bailey is the father of Richie, exactly like Roxy pegged him for.
Yeah.
The father of Richie, the killer from Scream 5. Quinn and Ethan are Richie's brothers, so we get another familial revenge deal going on, which, I don't know, disappointing. I remember being disappointed in Scream 2 when the killer was Billy Loomis's mom. It's just, I don't know.
It was interesting that there's three of them, though. And
that's true.
I didn't expect there to be, like, another brother, I guess. And then it's got also this very weird dynamic where Detective Bailey is, like, super obsessed with his dead son, Richie, like, to a degree that it feels like he doesn't care about his other kids at all. It's very strange. Like, I think he's the one who said that he bought all of that memorabilia that are in the glass cases in this theater that look like a gallery, like, museum setup.
Yeah.
Like, he bought them for his son.
Policeman's salary? Like you're not making a ton of money in New York City.
Truly, he was, like, just so obsessed with getting these things for his son, I guess. It's just really weird. And then, yeah, just the other two are down for it, I guess. And, like, Quinn's death was kind of weird. Like I said, they don't really show her, like, dying the way that they do other characters. She's just kind of, like, stabbed and thrown aside, and you don't really see it the way that you do, like, oh, here's a very obviously cut up dead body of her boyfriend, right, or the dude she was hooking up with, or, like, here's a character who fell from the ladder who is very obviously dead. And they also don't, like, wheel her out on a stretcher or anything, or, like, you know, in a morgue bag or anything. So, like, that was kind of weird. But to do it on purpose to get her off the suspect list, they know all the tropes, I guess, and they're trying to buck him. So Sam and Tara run from the Ghostface family. Family run from family. Tara ends up dangling over the theater's balcony. Ethan is swinging at her with a knife. Tara then reminds Sam that she wants her to let go, whereas they had a family talk about it before where it was more like emotionally letting her go. This time she means literally let her go so she'll fall to trust her. So in the ultimate show of trust, she does let her go, and Sam gives Tara the Billy Loomis knife as she drops. Tara then stabs Ethan in the mouth, killing him. Good job, good teamwork.
It is a little on the nose. Because she does emotionally let her go, too, right? It's like, it is about Tara wanting her older sister, Sam, to trust her, even though things are going to be dangerous. Like, this is a universal concept. This is, like, a pretty rich thematic idea for this movie to grapple with. I wish she didn't have to literally let her go. I wish it was like, only one of us can go, only one of us can crawl through the vent to get to whatever they need. And then she says, like, you go. Like, I wish it wasn't literally holding her and letting her go. That's my that's my note for Scream 6.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think it's just they wanted to be so on the nose about this show of emotional and, like, physical trust to be like, okay, I know you can take care of yourself. Here you go.
Yeah. At this point, Sam shoots Quinn in the head, taking out a second killer.
Dead Sam, for real this time.
we'll see. Come Scream 7.
True.
Sam and Detective Bailey then tumble over the ledge of their balcony themselves. It's Bailey, though, who we follow as he wakes up a few minutes later. After the fall, he gets a little concussion. He comes to, and he is on the defensive. He sees that one of the Ghostface costumes is missing. Sam shows up, wearing the Ghostface costume, stabs him. It's really nice Scream power subversion. Yes. Where, like, at the end, our girl gets to be the ghost face and kill the killer.
This part was super cool, too, because, yeah, she's being the one threatening this guy. And, like, all this time there has been a video projected on the screen that is, like, something that Richie shot. And, like, they show that screen being, like, cut in half. And I think, are things on fire at this point? Is there a fire here?
Yeah, they start a fire.
Yeah, where it's just, like, showing the memories of this dude, like, being evaporated and, like, eviscerated is very funny.
Yeah.
Very well placed, I think. However, Ethan comes back for one last scare, and that's when Kirby shows up and knocks a TV on him, killing him for good. And is also the same as the fate suffered by Scream 1 killer Stu Mocker. Coming full circle on that, I guess. Then everyone hangs out outside as the ambulance comes. Everyone who could be alive is, including Mindy, Chad, and Gail Weathers. Sam tells Tara she'll live her life the way that she wants to, and Tara tells her that she's for sure going to therapy.
Smart. Also, Sam is still holding the ghost face mask she wore when she killed Detective Bailey. And it's the same mask her father, Billy Loomis, wore when he killed all those teens in Scream 1. And what does Sam do? Wow, she drops the mask on the street and walks away, potentially leaving Ghostface behind forever. That's probably Scream- not.
Yeah, who knows?
I think Scream 7's announced.
Oh, was it really?
I think so, yeah.
That makes sense. Maybe we'll stop getting visions of ghost Billy Loomis. I can only hope.
I just can't imagine. I would actually want them, even though, like, I agree, I'm not a huge fan of it. It's kind of silly and pretty tapped. I would like them to just round it out. To do the three, it's about her truly leaving this aspect of herself behind. I hope Billy Loomis comes back just to finish this story, but ugh.
Well, if they did it, if she does actually go off the rails and becomes the killer or something, I could like that. Fun. I'd embrace that.
It'd be fun.
Yeah, that's Scream 6.
Yeah.
The sixth one. They actually put a number on this one, unlike the last one. Thank you.
Or they
I appreciate
try to
it.
Trick us.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really like this movie, even though, like, I'm on board for the franchisification of Scream. If they continue to find, like, it's not as thematically interesting as the last one that was kind of attacking this idea of Scream 5, Scrafivum, was, like, really about elevated horror and this kind of, like, Babadook style of horror that we are kind of entering this era of. This movie had less to say about the goings-on of horror and was more about, like, heightening the Scream franchise in and of itself, which I don't mind. It's... Roxy, I know we have done this to each other throughout the years on Scary Basement. You may have ruined this movie for me a little bit because I like the true crime angle so much. Because that's exactly right. That's exactly what horror is today. That's the biggest genre of horror that we are, like, experiencing the same sort of feelings we used to get from Freddy Krueger. Now it's, like, real, and it's more visceral, and it's scarier, so therefore Scream should be tackling it. And it
feels like the right heighten, too, like, because where else can you go after what they've done so far?
They didn't. God bless them.
Hey, maybe Scream 7. Hey, anybody who worked on Scream 6, who was writing Scream 7, pay me for this or not. I don't know. Just maybe take this idea and run with it, huh? I'm sure they're for sure listening to our podcast about their movie.
I don't remember what this... I was taking notes during this movie, but also, like, I don't remember a ton of them. I wrote, ha 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 ha, true crime limited series. So there was some textual reference in it. Almost like the way you articulated it and the way it feels like, it almost feels like that's an early draft
that I could
was
have seen
addressing
that.
True crime.
I think that they wanted to have Sydney come on this one, and so there was like a different version of it. I don't know how different it was, but I know that they had to, you know, figure out how to do the movie without her when she didn't come back. And like, hey, the studio should be paying her more. It's ridiculous that they weren't paying her what she asked for this.
Yeah, she deserves it.
Yeah, I wonder if that could be part of it. Who knows? How do you feel about the synchronized knife wipe that the sibling killers had after they stabbed Chad? It was like this little scene where after they stabbed Chad, he falls and they're both like standing on either side of his like bleeding body going after the rest of the crew, and they just synchronized knife wipe the knives that they have.
I loved it. I did. Like, I think that's another image that I don't know that we've seen in Scream before. We've definitely seen the two partners at the same time, but after they're decostumed. The idea of seeing two costumed ghost faces is very interesting to me, and I liked it. And so it's like, if we're going to do two ghost face, then yeah, we got to double everything up. We got to be doing double knife wipes. That's very fun.
Truly. Okay, so how do you also feel about Danny as a suspect? Did you ever for a moment think that Danny, the hot bod neighbor, was a suspect?
No.
Okay.
And I think they do a pretty good job with this character in that he gets his one big moment that, like, is another deep fear of mine. He sees the killer across the building, in the next building, through the window. It's like seeing something horrible happening and you can do nothing about it. He gets his nice moment. But he also is like, hey, don't trust anybody, including me. Like, which feels like a nice, wholesome bit of, I am not so arrogant. Like, I know I'm not the killer, but you don't know that. And he's like showing this self-awareness.
Yeah.
That makes it so like, it would have been like two misdirects too far if the killer says, don't trust me because I could be the killer. It's like, that would be a little looping. Like at some point, we have to just be doing things because we're characters behaving in a way that functions with our wants and not so we can throw the audience off the scent of the killer.
Yeah. And I think Danny. Also, because he is the boyfriend, sort of, again, I guess they're not really officially dating, but if it's, like, also the guy she was hooking up with again, that would be, like, kind of boring.
Well, at that point, then it's definitely Sam's fault. Like, yeah. At that point, how many times can you touch the stove before you stop blaming the stove and start blaming the hand? Like, you are dating the wrong men, and it's time to get off Tinder.
Yeah, I think that this movie did try to make sort of everyone a suspect, where sometimes the way the cinematography and music is framing a character. Like, they try to make Danny look more suspicious. Also, just, like, some of his line deliveries and stuff. And then, like, he comes in at the end, like, trying to kind of, like, join their group or something. Like, in a very, like, I don't know. He says some line because you've got, like, the core four characters. They say some, like, goofy thing about it, like, being them. And then Danny is also there. And he's like, me too. And they're like, no. You're not like us, okay?
Yeah, get out of here. One last thing I want to say about Billy Loomis and why this is another reason I hope he shows up in Scream 7. Skeet Ulrich, the actor who plays Billy Loomis, has gotten so much older since Scream 1, and rightfully so. A lot of time has passed. He's supposed to be a ghost teenager, and he's so fucking old.
Yeah, they didn't even, like, CGI him enough to look like, you know, the Rogue One dude who died, or Leia. Like, there is better CGI available, and they just chose to, like, put him in makeup and put a filter on him instead of giving him any help there, which is just like, why? Why?
It's awesome. I thought it was so awesome.
It just looks like he got some weird Botox and is still old.
Yeah. Yep.
It's unfortunate.
He's also, like, showing up in, like, the reflections of glass cases. It's not hard.
Yeah.
Like, you almost have more leeway to, like, really digitally alter his face. Yeah.
Truly, because it doesn't have to look, like, photorealistic in the moment, because it's not like it's an actor sitting next to him. It is, yeah, reflection on glass. Like, I don't know what they did with the CGI department, if it even existed. Maybe it's just all doing it practical. I don't know. One thing I want to know, though, and my prediction for Scream 7, which maybe it's too early to be talking about this, they haven't dug into the mom at all for the two sisters. The mom just, like, has been mentioned, and, like, she hooked up with Billy Loomis and then never spoke about it, and then got a husband, and then, like, tried to pass Sam off, and, of course, the other sister is, like, that is her bio dad, but, like, he just left then, too. So, like, what has the mom been doing all this time? Is she even relevant at all? I feel like she's gotta be.
Yeah, I'll bet she'll be the killer in the seventh one, and I'll be continually disappointed.
Just family killings all around.
It does feel like the Scream franchise has decided that it is logical that if one person is a killer, then their parents can avenge them and their family can avenge them, because I think that's been all the Scream killers have been family members of Billy Loomis until we got to Scream 5, right? I think Scream 3, it's Sydney's half-brother.
Yeah.
So there's, like, a bizarre familial tie. Scream 2 is definitely Billy Loomis' mother.
You just mean that they're family ties, sorry. Not that it's specifically with Billy.
Maybe not Billy Loomis specifically, but familial ties that is motivating these killings.
Yeah,
and even Scream 1 is about Billy Loomis, like, having his family destroyed by Sydney's mother. Like, that was the whole deal, right? She was having an affair with Billy Loomis's father, and he was pissed about it. It just feels like...
Scream 4 as well. Like, that's her niece, right? It's Sydney's niece who is just, like, upset. Or, like, cousin or something who is upset that, she's not the main character kind of deal.
We're kind of getting into, like, Star Wars territory, where it's, like, everything is the Skywalker family, and then the slight twist in the most recent Star Wars movie is that it's also the Palpatine family. It's, like, the Ned Campbell family and the Billy Loomis family are fucked, and they're just, like, in this eternal battle. They're Batman and the Joker. They're two hawks entangled, careening through the air, flying into a mountain. It doesn't feel like they're afraid to just say, like, and then another person snapped.
Yeah, I feel like that would be another way to differentiate Scream 7 from the ones that came before and do something different is by doing that, by not having them related by blood in some way.
Here's my Scream 7 pitch.
Okay.
They realize this. They realize that all of the killers have been secret family members. So they do a The Thing-like scene where there's a test and everybody's sitting around and we're going to figure out who's related. And they all do 23andMe.
In real time.
In real time.
What if, like, then every character is related to each other? Oh, shit. It could be any of
us. Everyone's the suspect. That would be very funny. Even the people who are, like, dating, they're like, uh-oh.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, God. Oh, we've committed crimes in the eyes of God. Roxy, do you have anything else to say about Scream 6?
Let's see. I've got my notes here. I did think, okay, we did kind of mention it before that, like, it's cool that Kirby came back. I liked her in Scream 4. Mm-hmm. Cool that she didn't die, and it was completely believable that she didn't as well. They kind of left it up in the air. So her coming back is, like, a cool FBI agent. And it's also weird that, like, Gail is very preoccupied with the fact that, like, she's younger than her. Like, they made Gail make a lot of lines, like, referencing how old Gail is, which, like, she doesn't look that old. I mean, sure, she's older than, like, the 20-somethings or 30-somethings in the cast, but, like, it's very weird to make her keep commenting on that, but okay.
That's true. Yeah, I do like having Kirby back. It's, again, this, like, it feels more valid if we are connecting all of these movies. It feels like we are building this world as opposed to, like, here's the new cast, here's the core four, here they are doing their thing. No, it's a world. All right, Roxy, do you have a question for me about the Scream 6 film we just watched?
Oh, I sure do. So in this movie, there's a huge fan-made museum of memorabilia for Richie's favorite horror movie franchise, Scream, Stab. So if you could, Mikey, make a similar museum full of memorabilia from your favorite movie or franchise or anything you can think of, what would it be?
The first thing that comes to mind, Roxy, and I'm so excited that we get to talk about this live on the podcast.
Oh?
It's Chucky. I love Chucky so much.
Not even, like, Lost or something? Chucky.
Well, I have, like, my things that mean the most to me. Lost, Resident Evil.
Yeah, Resident Evil also.
I wouldn't want a museum of those things, but a Chucky museum? Because he is a doll?
Yeah.
That'd be funny. I did just stay up all night watching the first season of Chucky a couple nights ago.
Oh my god, I need to finish that. And then, what, they're like on season 3 right now or something? Yes. Jesus, okay. Yeah, we should watch parties or something.
I started season 2, which is equally wild, but the first season of Chucky is so wild and so much fun. I just started over. I couldn't remember anything that happened, so I just watched it from the pilot.
I think, like, we were watching it on Discord with folks and watched, like, the first half or so, and yeah, we were having a blast, like, watching them as they came out.
It's so fun, and actually, like, the first season ends up getting really emotional.
Really? Okay, yeah, that makes me very excited to start it again.
I, like, teared up at the end of the first season.
What? Okay.
But then, yeah, like, I would love to just build a museum, because there's, Chucky is full of so much, like, iconography. You've got not just the dolls, you've got the boxes, you've got the, like, multiple characters that are different dolls, you've got
there'd be so many props with those and everything
exactly,
too.
Yeah, you've
like
got
the first Chucky doll, I
kind of knives,
it was, like, controlled by, like, I don't know, 9 people or something, like, each part of it, like, I can't even imagine how crazy that thing looks.
You've got, and not only that, there's like all these different iterations of like the Chucky props. You've got the animatronics, you've got the suits, you've got, like there's clearly a different doll they use when he's like trying to trick them into thinking he's a doll. Uh-huh. And that's just a regular doll. And then they've got like the one that has angry eyebrows. There's just so much Chucky stuff. His little shoes, the little tack hammer he threw at Aunt Maggie. Like, I just, I think Chucky, more so than certainly any other horror movie franchise, means a lot to me. And I love him. I am back on the Chucky bandwagon.
That's great.
Not been a Chucky movie I haven't liked. You know, like, I've liked them all to varying degrees. I've loved all of them. I love the show. He's great. He's a great guy.
I still haven't seen, like, the horror comedy ones. Like, what was it, 4 and 5 or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky. I haven't seen those ones. I
haven't seen those in years. I watched them when they came out, and I'm probably ready for a rewatch. But I remember liking them, and they're very campy, and I know that those two dolls have sex in Bride of Chucky, and I like that. Like, I don't care what else happens in the rest of that movie. That scene happens, and it's great.
Yeah, that sounds pretty wild. And also, there's just been so much, like, merchandising of Chucky now at this point that if you wanted to open up a gift shop for your Chucky museum, you'd be rolling in it, Mikey. You'd be making millions.
I might. Roxy, what would you build a museum to?
I'm sure you guys could probably guess this.
All anime.
Close. Is it?
What is it?
It would be neat to do one that was just like JRPGs in general, but there's so many. So I was like limiting it to Final Fantasy. That's like, what, 30 years at this point of history?
Of course.
Of different games, different platforms. Each one of them is usually pretty different and unique. And there's so much like insane merchandise. There's a person I follow on Twitter who is like trying, maybe she has already entered into it or not, but she's like the Guinness World Record holder or potential world record holder of having like the most Final Fantasy items. And like the amount of shit she has is absolutely insane, right down to showing like a Doritos bag that had like a Final Fantasy character on it that was a limited time collab that has got to be the most stale Doritos on the planet after this many years. But her name is Unalaska. If you guys want to check out some of the crazy videos, images she has of her merch, she's also like a Twitch streamer too.
I bet you could top her, Roxy.
I mean,
I bet you could get more Final Fantasy stuff than her.
If I was determined to make a museum, I sure as hell would. You know how I am at sourcing that kind of bullshit, weird, rare items. I could do it.
What would be like the centerpiece of your final? If you could have just like one prop that would be like right at the middle, the ultimate thing, what would be the Final Fantasy deal right in the middle?
Man, they have made some like life-size replicas for video game shows and art installations. Because it feels like every 5 years they do like a huge retrospective in a museum. Showing costume recreations, and then, like, I think they had this one-to-one model of Cloud's motorcycle. I can't remember which one it was, if it was the one from Advent Children or the one from the original Final Fantasy VII game, but it just looks so cool. It's like this crazy, like, fantasy motorcycle that looks kind of like it could function in real life, but at the same time, like, nobody would be riding
that. No, that's crazy.
It's just so fucking cool.
That's very fun. Roxy, it's time we give Scream 6 its numerical value. What rating out of 5 thumbs would you give Scream 6? And remember, we have 2 thumbs of our own and also a big box of hands here in case we need access to extra thumbs. What's your thumb rating for Scream 6?
So for Scream 6, it was a 4 for me. So very high up there. I think it was kind of an easy 4 based on the fact that, like, I kind of figured out the killer a little bit earlier, and there was a couple scenes here and there where it's like, yeah, maybe a little too into its own meta, or maybe, you know, making a character look suspicious just so there's a potential suspect and not because it really makes sense in the moment. But, like, those are such small things in the face of all of the great things that I loved about this movie. It is very indulgent in other places that feel completely fine and, like, fun. They tried to, like, up the ante with action scenes and different set pieces and locations. That was really neat. Having 3 killers, new. That's a new thing, too. And just had a lot of fun throughout, like, watching our characters get through this. So I had a blast with this movie. What about you, Mikey?
I also gave it a 4. This is a 4-ass movie.
Yeah.
4 thumbs up.
Yep.
the way I described it was like, it's wild and fun and silly, but it has the guardrails up, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're, you ever go bumper bowling, you can
yeah,
roll that ball as hard as you want into the bumpers. You're still going to hit some pins down. Like it feels yeah, like
it's solid.
They were not willing to break Scream, but they had inventive ways to give us the Scream we're used to. Like, as you were describing it just now, the idea that, like, there are some scenes that are a little too meta that are just, like, throwing the audience off more so than the characters. But I was like, maybe that's Scream's version of, you know, the girl in Nightmare on Elm Street always runs up the stairs instead of out the front door. Like, I almost think that's, like, a flaw in any other movie, but because it happens so consistently in every Scream that I'm just like, I kind of expect it. I kind of like when the characters are that dumb, you know?
Yeah.
It made me feel like that's a horror movie trope as opposed to a flaw in it. So yeah, this movie is a remix that still sounds like the original song, and I really, really love it.
Heck yeah.
But now, if you've watched Scream 6 and you just need something to wash the taste out of your mouth, or to get your mouth in a different mindset. What?
Hey, what sometimes you just need to do that.
Sometimes you gotta get your mouth in a different mindset. Let's recommend some palate cleanser. Roxy, what movie, book, TV show, video game, short story is the complete opposite in your mind of Scream 6?
So my mom is currently visiting me as of the recording of this.
Your mom is the opposite of Scream 6.
Yeah, she really is. She's a delight.
She is a familial connection who would stop the madness. She would be like, oh, my daughter was a killer. I'm not going to go killing myself.
So, like, we have been watching a lot of a particular show, and that show is Columbo. Like, have you ever seen an episode of Columbo?
I haven't, but it feels like it's in the zeitgeist now. Tell me a little bit about Columbo.
So I have not watched every episode, but I feel like from the sampling of episodes from different seasons I have seen, every single episode is structured basically the exact same way, where it starts with some characters you've never met, they've got a problem, one of them kills the other one, you see the murder happen, you see them planning it, you see it from the killer's point of view, you know who the killer is from the outset, and then Columbo shows up, and without interviewing any other suspects, he already knows who the killer is, but he's just trying to prove it. So the whole episode is just like mind games between Columbo and the killer and them bumbling around each other for, get this, an hour and a half, because every episode is movie length for some reason, because I guess that's what they did in the 70s or 60s.
Oh.
So yeah, there's nothing to figure out in this. Columbo doesn't even carry a gun. There's very rarely any weapons, you see. Uh-huh. It's pretty relaxed. There isn't a lot of action. There was one episode that had Patrick McGoohan in it, who, if you've seen the Prisoner TV show at all, do you know that one, Mikey?
No. I will say, Patrick McGoohan, I hardly knew him.
Okay, well, I won't go too into the minutiae of British actors from, what, the 60s. But anyway, in that one, he was like a super secret spy kind of thing, and they had a CIA thing going on in the background. So we did get some explosions from that, but like that is rare. For the most part, it's just relaxed without barely anything happening, just kind of walking around, people talking at each other. And that's not to say it isn't fun, but it is nothing like Scream 6.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. The time of revealing the killers is exactly the opposite in Columbo and Scream 6.
They are not concerned with it at all.
I will give a quick shout out. One of my favorite video game podcasts, Game Mess Decides, hosted by Jeff Grubb and Mike Minotti.
Mm-hmm.
They just started a new podcast called Columbros, where they review Columbo. So,
oh my God. Okay, I need to be watching that because now I like Columbo. It's fun. However much I was ragging on it, that sounds like a delight.
Yeah. I'll give you a my palate cleanser recommendation.
Yeah, let's have
it. Roxy, we talked about how Scream 6 is very much like sticking to the guardrails of what the Scream franchise is.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a Scream movie, but it finds new ways to be surprising. You want to talk about a movie that messes with its franchise? Let's talk a little bit about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation.
Okay, yep. Uh-huh.
We have the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre about a fucked up family in rural Texas who are, got hints of cannibalism. They're chopping up the teens. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation. Matthew McConaughey is a cyborg. I'm here to tell you, he's got a robot leg that he controls with a remote control.
What? Oh my god, I guess I don't remember that movie. Maybe I never saw that one and was confusing it for a different one. That sounds insane.
Yeah, they end up defeating him because they, like, steal the remote control from him.
Do they make him, like, kick himself in the face with his robot?
They, like, make his leg go crazy. But it is so wild. It takes these giant swings. They end up hinting that perhaps every Texas Chainsaw Massacre that has happened up to this point has been, like, a psyop by the government?
What?
They just, like, they shatter the rules of their franchise in a way that, like, I watched it. I was like, I don't know how you come back from this.
And
I think, I actually have no idea. I have no idea if there's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre 5. But, like, at that point, like, they rebooted it now. It's been rebooted.
There's so many different movies and, so many different reboots. Like, I don't know what the chronology is for those at all. Because, like, it was never one of my favorite sort of franchises, so I didn't really, like, follow it. So, yeah, it just kind of, like, looks like a mess from the outside. I don't know what movie they're on now or if they're still doing it. Are they?
Nobody knows.
I guess you got Rob Zombie, right?
Yeah, if Rob Zombie hits a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, actually, that would kind of track for me. I would be into it. Roxy, it's time now for haunted plugs. You can find Scary Basement on Twitter at @scary_basement. You can find us on Instagram at @scarybasementpod. And you can find Scary Basement on YouTube. That's at youtube.com/@scarybasementpodcast.
And I am on Twitter, Twitch, and Blue Sky as Red Mage Roxy. So same name. Can find me on all three of those. Come hang out. Come say hello. Join Blue Sky. We need more folks over there. It's a lot of fun.
I do like Blue Sky. It's just old Twitter again.
Yeah, you can actually have conversations with people. Imagine that.
We're following drama. We're doing it. You can find me, Mikey McCaller, on Twitch, Twitter, and Blue Sky as Secret Blimp, at Secret Blimp.
And if you could, we'd really appreciate it if you leave us a 5-star review on your podcast or video app of choice, whether it is on YouTube or SoundCloud or iTunes. That'd be great. It really helps us out.
Also, go to your friends. Say, hey, I know how much you love Scream 6. I heard a podcast about it. It's called Scary Basement. Let them know. Maybe Scream 6 isn't their jam. Maybe Annabelle is. Tell them about the Annabelle episode.
Hey, we did. We did that episode. I think that went up on YouTube pretty recently, too. Hey, hey.
If you know somebody who likes horror movies, tell them about Scary Basement. Do what you can.
And finally, check out our Patreon. Scary Basement is part of the Super NPC Radio Patreon, which is at patreon.com/SuperNPC Radio. And it's not just us over there. There's a bunch of other really awesome podcasts. Basically, a new podcast drops every single day. We've worked it out like that. So you get a ton of content over there from us and all the other folks over there at Super NPC.
How fun life is. I'm very scared all the time. Thank you for hanging out down in the Scary Basement. We'll see you next week.